Hi, everybody. Welcome back. I hope you had a nice Thanksgiving. Mine wasn't nearly as bad as I was fearing it would be. So that's good, right? You know? Was yours okay?
Yes.
Good. Yeah. Do you feel a little like now you have to get back into things? That's where I am at the moment. I'm like, oh yeah, I have to plug this in too. All these things to remember. So good. So today the plan was to talk about sorting, which I was very excited to tell you about. I got a song and I've got demos and it's all good stuff. But then Monica got back to me and said that there was a whole bunch of really interesting Scratch programs that got submitted. So what I'd like to do is stuff into the beginning of class here some demos of Scratch programs. One person asked me not to show his or her Scratch program, but I didn't hear from anybody else. If there is somebody here who really doesn't want yours shown, you need to let me know now. Otherwise, what I'd like to do, apart from reminding you that homework 4 is due Wednesday, and I'll take questions on homework 4, is to have our official Scratch off. So, I've got Scratch off is in two rounds. There were 10 programs that I really liked. Chosen. I didn't look at everybody's program for everything. I just took the Monica listed for me a handful of people, and I went through their programs and showed them to my family, and then mostly decided which ones I thought I liked the best. And I put them into two groups completely arbitrarily. And so what we'll do is I'm going to show you these five, and then you're going to click to vote. So you guys get to decide. But I get to pick the five, and you get to vote. But to do this, I'm going to need to actually show you these programs. So, people submitted two Scratch programs, typically one for the birthday card and one for a song. And for some people, I like their card better, and some people, I like their song better, and some people, I like both, and some people, I like neither. So, you'll see in the name of the program. You can tell if it's the card or the song. And now you can see who got nominated, but I'm trying to keep that secret for the purposes of suspense. How do I get it back? Scratch off one. Here we go. All right. So what you're going to need to do is watch and try to keep track of. I'm going to show you five of them before you get to vote. So you have to kind of. You might need to take notes or remember in your mind which one you like best. We know that you can find the max of a list with only remembering one thing. So you could potentially get by without writing anything down. All right, so this is Alam song, and it works. Looks like it might work. Oh, there's sound. Sorry, let me get you some sound. That's this guy, and this one doesn't have sound. There's a repeat loop in this one. It does have a surprise ending, so just stick with it. Thank you. I was going to have categories. This was going to be in the most artistic category, but there weren't very many in the most artistic category. So,
so I ended up not having a category.
It's like funniest. There's also going to be a foreign language category, because two people sent me things that were not in English. So, I thought it was an interesting choice. Yes, my computer just died. That should not be a reflection on the program I was about to show. Come on back. There we go. All right. Stop. All right, drum roll please. We're stopping in 3, 2, 1. one, and the bar graph will tell us the winner. Envelope, please. Oh, B, Stand By Me, the winner. Congratulations. So, the winner gets this lovely certificate, which says, I will read it to you. It says, scratch off, winner. Congratulations, little cat from Scratch is saying congratulations. There's a little program on the side that says, when flag is clicked, say congratulations forever, play sound applause, and wait. And it says, for scratching above and beyond the subroutine call of duty. Great insights in computer science, fall 2007, and then there's a fake signature of me, and then a fake signature of the TA. I mean, the signature. All right, so let's see. That was who won?
B.
B, right. All right, so and B was Angeli, is that right? Angeli Dattari, who is here? Yes? Okay. All right, congratulations. All right, round two. All right. All right, next set. So that's scratch off two. And congratulations for everyone. Those are really fun. And you can tell from people's reactions that they appreciated the cleverness. All right. Is the right one? I think so. All right. I have them in some random order here. All right. All right. Is today your birthday? It's not my birthday, so I'm going to click on the thumbs down.
No? Then wait your turn.
Well, no, wait, I'm just thinking it actually is my birthday.
Woo! Happy birthday!
All right. That was choice A. Choice B. Is this? This was going to be nominated in the best foreign language category. Or just plain weirdness. It's a bit of an intro. We're not going to go through the whole song. I wasn't able to wait that long. German. Like, Mädchen means girl, and du bist means you are, but I don't know what, is this a song that people know?
No.
All right. But this is my favorite part. David Hasselhoff is very popular in Germany.
Yes.
He's really popular in Europe for some reason.
It's the rippling abs, obviously. I don't know. That was news to me. All right. So, it's a hard act to follow, but we're going to keep pressing on. Click on the flag. And then what? Do I space bar anything? Also sort of bizarre when the man is turning into a birthday hat. I don't know what people were thinking. All right, and then we've got this one. I think I hit it right now. Y and D. Break dancing, ballet, and simply shifting from side to side. No, I'm not criticizing, I'm just pointing it out. It's a style. I think it's an appropriate song, too, don't forget. You get the lyrics. So my daughter is quite the scratch connoisseur, my 8-year-old. So when I was showing her each of the programs, she would look at each one and go, oh yeah, I like using that background. That is a nice background. Okay. So she knew which things were part of scratch and which things people actually imported. So it's very helpful to have her along. All right. And last one. Choice E. Oops, wait, no. Alright. Did it say go Charlotte? It's your birthday?
Shorty.
Yeah. It's a 50 Cent song.
There we go. Alright, on stage. I'm like, how about it, Charlotte? All right, so there we go. Those are the five choices. Just to go back and review again. First, A is the one that has the two thumbs. You click on the one and it gives you the appropriate message. B was David Hasselhoff is entertaining his German fans. C was the elephant that blew out the candles and got a banana on its head. D was the group of people on the stage doing their different dances. And the last one, E, was the dancing guy who appeared out from under the balloons. And then sang to Charlotte. That may be everybody. Anyone need a little more time? You good? 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. All right. Once again, the winner is, the award goes to, whoa! Is that right? Wow, that wasn't even close. All right, so congratulations. Let me make up the certificate here. I would not. Okay, all right. The crowd has obviously spoken on that one. So Keith Dempsey, are you here? Well done. You've definitely won the crowd's approval on that one. Let me write out your certificate here. My best pawn. Yeah. Creative and free thinking.
I was watching your show like a little before, and then it was in the middle of the movie, I was like, that's funny.
So, what was it? Him saying it?
Yeah, like just randomly, like a little like word in the dream, and I was like,
David,
sitting on a beach, I was like, that's funny as hell.
In German?
Yeah, in German.
And a scratch program is born. Congratulations. Alright, well that was fun. Alright, back to computer science, as it were. But I'm sure, yeah, there was a lot of other good wins. I did whittle it down a bit, and I appreciate it. All the effort that people put into these, it was really cool to look at. Alright, so, back to fun in the sun. All right, so last time, the very end, just before I sent everybody away to have fun on Thanksgiving, I had people come to the front of the stage, like three rows of people come and hold up numbers, and we sorted from smallest to biggest. And we did it by swapping adjacent people. So two people, if they were next to each other, they could be told to switch places. All right, and the question now, since what we've been talking about lately is algorithms and the efficiency of algorithms, how much work they do as a function of how big the data is that they're working on, let's think about what happens now if you're trying to sort a list by swapping. adjacent numbers. So we're going to sort a list, smallest to largest. So we've got the small ones over here, the big ones over there. And we're only going to be able to swap adjacent elements. We're going to move the smallest, and the way we're going to do this, I forget who it was, somebody up in the corner there did the sorting for us, and the strategy that he came up with, there's lots of ways you could do this, but a very natural, systematic, sensible strategy is you take the smallest number and you bubble it to the front of the list. So in this case, what's the smallest number? There's a 272, right? All the way at the end there. We can just swap it pairwise until it gets to its final position. We know where that one goes. So let's just get it out of the way, put it there, and then worry about sorting the rest of the list. Which, by the way, is an example of reduction. Once we've pulled the smallest one out, we just have to sort what's left. And we know that we're going to have, when we finish this process, we'll have a sorted list. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to take the 272 and swap it all the way into its position. So in this example, there's 10 numbers, and 272 needs 8 swaps to make it to the front of the list. Okay? So that's a concrete example, but now I want you to try to think about it a little more generally. So here's the question. If there's n elements in the list, in this case there was 10, but there could be n in general, what's the most number of swaps that we might need to get the smallest number all the way to the left? You might be lucky, it might be there in the beginning, or you might be unlucky, and it might be very far away. If you're as unlucky as possible, you're not going to be infinitely unlucky. There's always going to be some number of swaps that will get that element to its position.
So just that one? Like,
we're just worrying about the smallest one. So 272 or whatever, you know, we've got a list of n elements. You're going to have to move things by swapping. It might take 0 swaps. What's the most it could take as a function of n? Is it 2 times n? You're still going to ask you another question. Go ahead.
Like, all right, when you say swap, I mean just move it by itself. Like, you don't have to... Is that the, say, in the worst possible position, that's a fact.
And I didn't say that.
Oh, well.
But go ahead.
Like, it's just move that where it's supposed to be. Like,
right.
You don't have to worry about...
You have to swap... You know, this kind of thing.
In front until it's in the front.
It's actually kind of fun. What? Sorry?
Yeah, just swap it with each element in front of it until it gets over.
Right. And once it's in its final position, then we're done. We can stop. Yeah. So the question is, how many swaps does that take? In the example that I showed you, the word n was 10, and it took 8 swaps. But what's the worst it could be? If there's n things in the list, could it be 2 times n? Could it be n plus 1, n squared, or n minus 1? The one thing that represents the worst possible case. I said it takes 8 swaps to get the smallest one to the end. That's like n minus 2. And I didn't even make that one of the choices. Though it probably would have been meaner had I made it one of the choices, because it's not right. So what's the worst place that the small number could be in terms of the number of swaps it's going to take to get to the end? Yeah, go ahead.
Could be like at the very end.
If it was at the very end, in the position where 294 is. And in that case, how many swaps does it take to go all the way across? It seems like it should be n, but it's not, right? Because the first swap puts it in the set in the second to last position. So let's try it. So 294, we need 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 swaps to get that one to the last, to the end of the list. And that's what it is in general. It's the number of elements in the list minus 1, which is choice E. And if you notice, people seem to pick up on that. I assume that the n squared people were just liking how pretty n squared was. Because it doesn't have much to do with this particular. Well, we'll see in a moment if it has much to do with this problem. Alright, so any questions about this? Do you see what's going on here? So if we're sorting by this kind of adjacent swaps, just getting the smallest one in position might take n minus 1 swaps. But now, we've got a list where the smallest one's already in place, and the rest of them need to be sorted. Now there's n minus 1 that need to be sorted. So let's continue this thought process. So given that it takes n minus 1 to get that one item into its place, how long does it take to sort a list this way? So how are we going to sort the whole list? The first thing we're going to do is find the smallest one, and then swap it until it gets to the final position. Now what do we do with what's left? We find the next smallest. You know, ignore the one that we already put over there. It's not even there anymore. From the list that's left, find the smallest and bubble that one into position. Once that's into position, ignore it and do what's left. We're just going to keep bubbling things through, filling up from smallest to biggest until there's only one guy left and it's the largest and we're done. So we've sorted the whole list. Yeah, well, but now we've got, it's big O notation, so you don't have to actually count in detail. But is it more like n? Is it more like n squared or 2 to the n? That sort of thing. Thinking about, the first time it's going to be n minus 1 swaps. The second time, it's going to be less than that because the list is shorter, in a sense. So how many altogether do we get? So it's happy that people were comfortable with the previous one. The question is, can you put these ideas together now and see what the whole sort's going to do?
Oh, we're still in dim mode here.
All right, people coming to a conclusion here. So sometimes it's really helpful to start with a concrete example that you can do without all the ends and things, just to make sure that you understand what the process is, and then you try to generalize it. So if we're back to our 10-element list, the first thing that happens is we have to find the smallest one and bubble it into place. And we already worked that through. The worst that it could be is 9 swaps. But now that one's in place, so let's actually write it out this way. So 10 elements looks kind of like not too bad. All right. So we have some list. There's things. There's numbers in the boxes. The first thing we do is find the smallest one and bubble it until it's in its place. Okay. Now there's 9 guys left. Bubbling the next one in position is going to be how many swaps? At worst. It might be none. It might be already in the right place. It might be here. But it might be the bad case, which is far over here, in which case it's going to take, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and then it's in position. So 8 swaps to get the second guy, then 7 to get the next one, then 6, then 5 to get this one into place, then 4 to get that one into place, then at most 3 to get this one in place, then at most 2 to get this one in place, then if these guys are backwards, there's still one more swap. Once we do that, both of these guys are in place. So we're talking about 9 plus 8 plus 7 plus 6 plus 5 plus 4 plus 3 plus 2 plus 1, where our n was 10. Okay? So really what's going on here is we're just summing up the numbers from n minus 1 down to 0. So it's kind of like 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4 up to n, which we've seen a couple of times now as big O of n squared. So that's what we get in this example, which was the answer that more people gave than the other answer. Not as certain as the previous one, but yeah. So what's going on here is basically there's n elements that have to be put into their place, and each one takes like n swaps, n times n, n squared. Okay? So that's how long it takes to sort using this method, by adjacent swap. And n squared is not bad for a sort. In fact, probably any way that you can think of for sorting a list is going to end up being n squared. You can come up with stupider things that are worse than n squared. There's a competition to find the slowest possible sorting algorithm for geeky people, and one of them basically involves, it ends up being 2 to the n exponential, and what you basically do is you scramble the list and then you look to see if it's sorted, and if it's not, you scramble the list and you look to see if it's sorted, and you can see this is going to take a long time. It's actually big O of n factorial. What's that? What? Okay. I wasn't sure what you were saying. But is it bad? That's a bad way to sort. It turns out that you can actually do better. And that's what I'd like to get through today, is to tell you about some other algorithms that actually get you down to n log n. Instead of n times n, it's n times the number of digits in n. That's what log n is, essentially, the number of digits in n. And so that's actually a lot faster, right? If you're talking about a number like 1,000, that's a big number, but it only has 4 digits in it. So n log n is a substantial improvement over n squared, and there are sorting algorithms that can do this. In fact, people have shown that if you're going to sort a list just by making comparisons, you cannot do better than n log n. So it is the best that you can do, and there are algorithms that can do it. So case closed, in a sense. All right, excellent. So let's get into the lecture. Any questions about that? Are we good to go? Yeah, okay.
You said that n log n is what? It's better to use that because of what?
N log n is it grows much more slowly than n squared. It's bigger than n by a log n factor, but it's smaller than n squared. So if you're going to choose between two of these algorithms and n is really big, you want to go with the one that's n log n. All right, so just again, to put this into context, sorting is kind of fun, and it's an interesting puzzle, and it turns out there's a lot known about it in computer science, but it turns out actually it's really important practically, too. And so what I'd like to do is kind of use Google again as a way of motivating this idea. So we talked a little bit about Google before. I would say that there's a very reasonable way of viewing what Google does as consisting of three important chunks, and we're going to talk about all three of them. The first one was this idea of a web crawl, or spidering, to find all the pages. So download known pages, collect links to other pages, repeat. So this is, we studied graph search. When we talked about graph search, that was linked to this notion of web crawl, of Google picking up pages from all over the web by looking to see the pages that they point to, gathering them together. But that's not enough. You don't have a web search engine at that point. You just have a website with copies of all the other pages. What makes this useful is the other steps. they all have to work together. But step two is the notion of building a giant index. Like in the back of a textbook, right? You have all the words. Anything that you might want to find is in the book, but it's not organized in a helpful way. If there's something particular that you're looking for, that's what the index is for. And what's special about the index? It's the same words that are in the book, but they're sorted alphabetically. And that's not arbitrary. That's actually a really useful thing because it makes it so that you can find things fast. So that's one of the advantages of sorting, and that's what Google has to do that too. They have to take all the words from all the pages that they've gathered together and then sort them all, make a giant index, so that when you ask for web pages that contain the word tukiplot, it can go right to those pages. It doesn't have to actually read all those web pages and go, no, this one doesn't have tukiplot, no, this one from CNN doesn't have tukiplot, and so forth. It can just say, oh, tukiplot, I've got a list of web pages that have it. All right, so that's the idea of indexing. And then later, so now the Google people can find things fast. The last step that we're going to talk about in another day is the notion of distributed search. That says, all right, now so people are asking queries from all over the world. How do we provide the answers to them as quickly as possible? And the answer is essentially use lots of computers. And to do that, you have to organize the computation in a way that separate computers can get the job done faster than just one.
How do they determine relevance? Like, because Wikipedia, they got a list, whatever, and they have relevance by some percent. How do they determine that?
So in Google, so the early web search engines, in case you were around before Google, does anybody remember the world before Google? Yeah? Okay. Did you use a different search engine then?
Yeah.
Remember what it's called?
Okay.
I used to use AltaVista. Did anybody use that one? It was pretty good. At the time, it was the fastest and the most comprehensive, but Google did one thing much, much better than AltaVista. What AltaVista did is if you search for something and it hit on a whole bunch of different pages, it would present all of them to you in some arbitrary order. And what Google does that's different is that they have this notion of relevance. Like, I'm not just going to give you any page first. I'm going to give you the page that seems most relevant. And they have a scoring function, which is completely proprietary. And a colleague of mine from when I was in AT&T got hired away from AT&T. And his job is to be in charge of that scoring function. And the scoring function has things in it like how many words are on the page. If there's very few words on the page and it has your words on it, then probably it's more concentrated information and probably rank that higher. On the other hand, there's also the question of how many other web pages point to this page. Because if you have a web page that lots of other pages point to, it's considered authoritative, and then its score gets bumped up. And so they just tinker with this function all the time in a way that makes it seem like it produces better results according to their tests that they run. There's no science to it, really. It's just a question of doing something that works. And they include lots of different... So is the word in the title of the page versus in a link on the page versus in a footnote on the page? And they weight all these things differently. Are the words that you search for close to each other on the page? That matters, too. So they combine all these factors together, and then they do another sort, right? This is sorting coming up again. They sort things by the score. They take all the pages that hit, and then they reorder them according to the score, and then present them to you in sorted order of score. Now, early on, they actually thought about maybe they should actually tell you the score, right? Not just give you the web page, but then put a little score next to it. And they don't do that. I think they thought that it would be revealing of their function, which they didn't want to do. And I think they also thought that it would be confusing to people. But there is information in that score. Like if you see one with a really high score and all the ones after it have very low scores, maybe that indicates to you that there's kind of a gap in the relevance. This one's definitely relevant, and all the rest are kind of garbage. But anyway, they don't give you that information. All right, so that's Google in a nutshell. So I've been trying to convey the idea that sorting algorithms are really important. They get studied a lot in computer science, especially in introductory classes. Nowadays, people have written very good sorting algorithms and made them part of the library in different software systems. So most people don't have to write their own anymore. It's kind of been done. But it is really useful to go through the process of thinking about, well, why did they choose to use this sorting algorithm over others? So I wanted to do a live demo, but I think we're not going to be able to do that. But these are all the words. But remember, in the previous lecture about the web with all the links and so forth, I found a bunch of web pages. Here's all the words that are on all those web pages in order of web page. So, for example, there's page 3 and 4 and 9. Those are all the web pages that I've listed up there from my list. And I've just listed the words as they appear in order on the page. So now, let's see if you can tell me the answer to the following question. The word walkthrough is on this slide. Can you find what page is the word walkthrough on?
4.
You see it?
Yeah.
How did you do that? And why did I do that?
I can do something about that show.
How did you do that so fast?
I skipped quickly and looked at the first one.
So you were searching, you were hoping that W's would stand out. Is that right? There are multiple. Oh, there's multiple walkthroughs too. You see like four words ahead of that.
Yeah, like four differences.
Differences appear a couple times. Yeah. That does make them easier to find if they appear in multiple pages. What about Google Blackout?
Nine.
All right. Yeah, I picked a good one this time, right?
there we go.
No jumping. I love to jump, but it really hurt. All right. There's another one up in the middle that I won't touch. Up the next column. But I'm hoping that you, even though this is now a group of eyes, so we had a parallel algorithm here, people scanning in different places, but I hope you at least appreciate the idea that it was a little bit tricky. You had to rely a little bit on luck to kind of have your eyes get zapped to the right place on the page. But let's compare that to the sorted version, all right? So now, it's the same list as before, except I've suppressed repeats that are on the same page, and I've sorted by word, not by page, okay? So now, if you want to find, say, the word great, it's on page 9. In fact, it's the last one, it's the last of the G's, it's right up there, all right? If you try this a couple times, you'll see that it's much faster to just zoom right in on the words that you want if they're sorted this way. In fact, this is why the phone book is sorted by name as opposed to, say, street address or something like that. It would be the same information, but it's so much harder to find things. You're stuck scanning as opposed to being able to do what's called binary search, leaping from place to place. Like, let's try another one. Let's just do it this way. We'll take the word. All right, we're going to take the word concocted, okay? And we'll start off, where should we start off looking for it? Well, you kind of know that it starts with a C, it's probably on the left, but let's be dumb like a computer and say we'll just start somewhere in the middle. So we look here and we see the word NIM. And that's all we see. But we know which direction to go now on the slide, left or right. Because we know the concatenated comes before NIM in the alphabet, right? So what do? We can now throw away that all these, we don't even have to look with our eyes over here. We can now zoom right over into here. And we look here, we see the word frame. Which way do we go from here?
That way.
Continue this way. All right, now we have contents. All right, we need to keep going ahead in the list. We might, mistakenly jump past it and go into the B's. The B's, that's too far. We've got to come back a little bit. Calls, computers, concatenated, concocted. We got it. All right, and so we made these much bigger jumps. As opposed to having to skim through sequentially, we can just make a very small number of jumps. How many jumps? If there's n words in our list and they're not sorted, on average, we're going to have to go through about half of them. So what is that? Big O of what? So just linear search, just right across the list, left to right. If there's n words in the list, on average, it's going to take us
n over 2,
which in big O
n.
Is big O of n, right? Which is ignore the over 2 part. Okay. But what if we could jump around? What if we can take advantage of the idea that the list is sorted so we can make far fewer kind of queries into the list? Well, if we look in the middle first, we know whether the answer we're looking for is on the left or right, and so we throw away half of what there is, leaving us, we had n things to search, now we've got only n over 2 to search. We're going to do that again. We're going to look in the middle of that one and throw out either the left or the right half, depending on which ours is in. So we're going to go from n over 2 to n over 4, and then n over 8, and we're going to keep going until we're left with a list of just one thing. So how many times can you divide this list of n in half before you're guaranteed to be just down to 1 to check? I've described it almost this way before.
Log.
That's what log does. That's what log tells us. So we go from something that would be n if we had to search through everything to log n, the number of digits in n. It's huge, huge advantage. This is why we can have a dictionary, an unabridged dictionary with 20,000 words in it, and we can still find things. We're not still in, third grade looking through all the words. Jump to the middle, jump to the quarter, jump to the eighth, and then we're done. We got the word. So, yeah, here's the same example again. So, look in the top list. Can you find 212? Is 212 in the list, I guess, is the question. Yeah, it is. How about 545? Yeah. Are you looking in the sorted one, or are you doing that fast in the unsorted one? Really? How do you do that? 811.
No.
And again, is it easier to now look at the sorted list? Look for 811 in the sorted list. It's sorted by rows, by the way.
Nope.
So 811 would go right here. And it's not there, so it's not in it, right? We don't have to look. Well, was it over here? You don't have to look there. You just have to find a place in the list where there's a number bigger and a number smaller. All right? So having the sorted list makes the problem of saying yes or no, is this number in the list, much, much faster than an unsorted list. It turns out that there's other problems that are also easier, not just find is this element in the list or not, but there's other things that are easier too. Let's say, is there a pair of numbers that sums to a particular value? So, let's see. Can we do this?
I'm not sure if we can do this.
All right. So is there a pair of numbers in the list that sums up to 150?
No.
How do you know that?
Because there's not.
Well, sure. Yeah, what do you think?
Because all the numbers are bigger than half of 150.
Right. Now, how hard is that to tell from the first list? It's a little harder to tell from the first list, but in the second list, it is easier to tell. If their numbers had sum up to 150, they have to be, of course, you'd be like the smallest one plus another small one, but the two smallest one add up to 250, which is more than 150. But let's try a harder one. See if you can figure out how to do this. I think it would help if we had the list and we could actually write on it, but let me try to do without that. Alright. Can you find a pair of numbers that sum up to 7, 6, 6? And I claim it's easier in the sorted list than the unsorted list. But you have to come up with a scheme to make it work.
Ooh. 41 and 45.
That's what?
285.
285. Okay, how the hell did you do that?
Like the small numbers I know is gonna be hard, but
so let's try to think of the best way to actually illustrate.
I really would like to be able to write on this.
I've seen it in PowerPoint, sometimes you can actually like scribble on the slides. That would be really helpful. Failing that. Let's try that. Alright, so here's our numbers, but they're too small for you to read. Ooh, they're getting bigger. Is it big enough to read now? Maybe, but they're not on the screen anymore.
Who designs this stuff?
Yeah, you can say computer scientist, is that what you mean? Now I put it in the way of this. So. This was supposed to be a quick aside. It's not working out that way.
I think it's the numbers that come under that should do it. Or you can push the rows closer together.
Alright, that seems better. Okay, alright, good. Talk me through it.
Alright, well, each number, like category, I guess you could say, you know how you got the ones, the twos, the threes.
Sure.
There's only certain combinations that will actually get you close to that number. So it's like start with, say, the ones and the fives. And then
okay, hang on. So because you're looking now at the fives, are we ever going to have to worry about any of these numbers? Any of these numbers down here?
Yeah, you will. Eventually, like later on. Like, if nothing works out here, then...
No, I don't think so, because to get 7, 6, 6, we're going to need add something that's too smaller than we have. Right? Like, anything bigger than 7, 6, 6 is right out.
Yeah.
So we can just kill all these. They're done. All right. And in fact, these guys are done, too, because 124 is the smallest number, and it takes us over this. And that's 769. Yeah. So these guys are all out. All right. So now what are you going to do? You just happened to see it, didn't you?
You just pair them up and.
Which? How do you pair them up?
124 and 299. It gets
299.
No, I mean 124 and 599. It gets
right. So that you go from the ends, right?
Uh-huh.
Right. And if the total of the ends is too big, then who do you throw away?
The big one.
The big one, right? Gone. Now we moved on to the one inside that. Okay? If the total is too small, who do we throw away? The small one. So each time we're taking two numbers from the list, the first one on the list and the last one on the list, we add them together, and one or the other of them is going to get killed. So each time we do that, we throw away one number. Okay? How many times do we have, if there's n things in the list, how many times are we going to have to do that before we've whittled it down and either checked that the number, that the answer doesn't exist or found it? Right? Each time we add two numbers, we throw away one from the list. There's n things in the list, so what's the most we can throw away? Like n, right? Yeah, n minus 1. So this is a little tricky, but really what's happening is you end up being able to pull things off the ends and work towards the middle. Now contrast that with what happens if you have an unsorted list. With this unsorted list, what are you stuck doing? You have to take like the first one, the 262, and then you say, well, does anybody match up to make 766? Let's just scan through. So for each number, each of the n numbers, you have to pair it with each of the other n numbers. There's n squared ways of pairing them. And so the total time is going to end up being like big O n squared. Whereas with the sorted list, it's big O of n. You just work from the both ends, and you end up getting the right answer. So that's kind of slick, in fact. Right? So you can, even if you start with the unsorted list, maybe you could sort it and then solve it much faster than you could with the sorted list, the unsorted list. All right. So that's a question, and maybe you didn't quite get that, and maybe that's okay. The algorithm is a little tricky, and it's not all that valuable, but it's neat. But let's not worry about it. So, is the number in the list yes or no? Much easier with a sorted list. Is there a pair of numbers that adds up to a target? Much easier with a sorted list. Is there a repeated number in the list? How long would it take in the unsorted list? How do you check for repeated numbers in the unsorted list? You have to kind of look at each one and then scan through to see if it's in there someplace else. It's n squared. Okay, you're looking at all pairs of numbers to see if they match. How about in the sorted list? Can we actually answer that question? Is there a repeated number in this list?
Yes.
What is it?
5, 6, 9.
How did you do that?
Just scan through and I saw
one
next to it. So
you were asking what the question is or how to solve it? I think the people here, because they're closer to the screen, the light's getting to them quicker, and they are answering questions. So just we'll talk it through the other way. So go ahead. What's your question? That's fine. How did we find it? He said he went skimming through the list. So we'll just skim through the list, 124, 126. And what we're doing at each position is looking at the guy next to him and saying, are you the same? 225, 242, 262, 321, 405, 569. We found it. All right. And so now we say, yes, there's a repeated number in the list. And in fact, it's 569. Having them sorted like this was really useful. Why? Because each number, if it has a duplicate, it has to be next to it in the sorted list. It doesn't have to be next to it in the unsorted list. Go find find the two 569s in the unsorted list. There's one. Oh, there they are. They're both on the right border. But, that's irritating. And it's so irritating it's n squared. Whereas it's linear in this. You just scan through the list one time. Each number, you check the one next to it and see if it matches. So, n squared, n, for finding whether or not there's a duplicate. That's faster. What about finding the smallest number in the list? How do you do that in the unsorted list? Now, nobody from here, it's you're cheating. How do you find, so in the unsorted list, how do you find the smallest number? Keep track in your head of, yeah. And so what is this? So that's big O of what? Since we're running through all the list and we're doing, very simple things for each element of the list, it's what? No. We're just, for each element of the list, we just do one thing. So it's like N.
So
it's like big O of N. Right? So the difference between N and N squared, N just means you go through the list once. N squared means for each thing in the list, you have to go through the list again. You're looking at all pairs. N just means you look at each thing once. Okay? All right, do you have a question?
Oh, I was just going to...
No. It could help.
Because you asked how do you find the...
The smallest one.
Number. I was just going to say look at the first digit.
Yeah, but you have to look at all the first digits, right? So you're right. You don't have to look at the whole number, but you do have to look at each number. And you look at each number about once, and so it's linear. It's like one for each element, so n elements, n times, big O of n. What about the unsorted list? Find me the smallest number in the in the sorted list. How do you find the smallest number?
Look at the front.
It's sitting right there at the beginning of the list. How about the largest number?
Back.
It's sitting right there at the end of the list, 977, right? Constant time, big O of 1. That's how we write it in computer science. Big O of 1 just means you just immediate. There's no, you don't have to, doesn't matter how big the list is, you just go right there and you're done. Okay? So finding the smallest is easier, finding the biggest is easier. How about finding the median? We talked about answering the question, is the median, you know, above or below some value? You can do that in the unsorted list, but it's like big O of N. Finding the median is even harder. But what about in the sorted list? Well, you just, once you know how big the list is, you just go to the middle. Is it this guy? I think that's the middle. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. No, it's sort of part. It's between those two. There's an even number of. But anyway, you just go right there. So finding the median, once the list is sorted, finding the median, big O of 1, constant. And the other one, big O of, we don't even know. It could be N squared. You could sort the whole list and then look in the middle. That might be one way to find the median. All right, so sorting helps. Sorting is a really powerful thing. What I'd like to do is tell you about two different, there's books written about, in fact, there really are. There's a very lovely textbook written by Donald Knuth just about sorting algorithms. You can do a whole course just on sorting algorithms. We're not going to do that. We're going to try to stuff it all into this lecture. But so I'm going to just pick two of these sorting algorithms and compare them, mostly because one is really simple and obvious and it's easy to understand. The other one because it's really fast. All right, so we'll start off with selection sort. This is a lot like our bubbling idea that we talked about. The idea is really simple. We're going to go through the list one item at a time, keep track of the smallest item we found. When we're through the list, we pull out the smallest item and we add it to a list of sorted items, and we repeat this until all the items have been removed. So you take your list of n, find the smallest, that's like n minus 1 comparison. You have to do kind of running through the list, find the smallest one. Once you find it, pull it out, add it to your list of sorted items, and now your list is one shorter. So now you go through and do it again. You find the shortest of what's left. First time through, it's going to take you n to find the smallest. Then the list gets smaller. It's going to take you n minus 1 to find the smallest. Take that one out. Next time through, it's going to take n minus 2 to find the smallest. How much is that going to be by the time we're done? For each of the n elements that were in our sorted list, we might have to look through like n elements to find which one it is. So that would be n squared. Right. So n squared, which is not great, but it's not horrible. You can do worse. Really simple, right? I mean, do you guys get this sort? I had a deck of cards that I was thinking of using as a demo for this. So you start off with an unsorted list, which sounds like this. That's the sound of an unsorted list. All right, so we won't do the whole stack because that would be irritating. But I want to sort the cards that I've got. And sometimes you do this when you play cards, right? So you just kind of sift through, find the smallest one. I got an ace. Okay, I found an ace. That goes on my list. I wish you could see this. Just putting it on the screen doesn't help, but it's very small. It's an ace. Ace of spades. All right, now I go through what's left. I see some fives. Five's the smallest. In fact, I got two of them. 1, 2, I feel like I should do a magic trick now. Was this your card? No. All right, so now I go through what's left. I see a 9, I see a 7, I see 3 sixes. All right, sixes are out. I go through the list again. I see 9, I see 7. Woo. I go through the list, I see 9. I go through the list, I see jacks, queen, king, sorted. That's selection sort. You with me? Okay. Does anyone have another way of sorting cards? Or anything else? What if you had like a whole big pile of, I don't know, let's say you had all the midterms from the class and you want to sort them alphabetically by person. What would you do? I don't know, what would you do? Gotta have a way to do it. Surely you've sorted things.
Maybe put all the A's in one pile.
Okay. So you make room on your table for 26 piles, one for each letter of the alphabet. Then we're going to go through all the exams, and there are how many of them?
N.
Very good. I thought you were going to say like 73, which would also be correct, but we think N. All right, so it's N. I've got N exam. Each time, I'm going to run through this list once and put each one in its proper place by the letter of the alphabet. Okay? All right. So how long did that take me? Like N. Big O of N. All right. Now, I've got the A's. What do I do now? And do what with them?
Sort.
How? I understand, but what procedure?
Second digit.
Second letter, yeah, right.
I mean, so, letter.
Yeah, it's okay. I think it numbers too. So now I repeat this process for the second letter of the alphabet. Now, I probably have a lot fewer exams now, but nevertheless, I now sort them by alphabet by the second letter. And if I ever get down to just one in each pile, that's sorted. I can scoop them all up, put them aside, and start working on the next pile. Okay? The total time that's going to take to do this is n, because I'm going to run through the list, times the number of letters in people's names. Because I run through the list basically once for each letter position in people's names. So if people have like 8 or 9 names, sorry, or digits, no, if people have 8 or 9 letters in their last name, then I'm going to have to run through all the exams about 8 or 9 times. It's going to be like 8 or 9 times n, which is big O of n, which is good. In fact, it's a lot better than n squared. This is a sort that's called, I want to say bin sort. I think it's called bin sort. Or radix sort. Let's call it radix sort. Which basically you sort on each of the digits. And it does, you get an O of n sort, or O of n times the number of digits. The number of digits could be as big as n. So maybe that's n squared. It's never really that bad though. But we kind of cheated because we actually looked at the individual letters. Most sorting algorithm analyses are done just based on comparisons. All you know is, here's two names, I know which order they go in. But I can't ask questions like, what's the third letter in this name? Alright, so that's another way. So that's a pretty good way to sort. Actually, it's a very good way to sort. You need room for 26 piles, but I think that's not so bad. Any other sorts? Any other ways that you do it? Yeah, go ahead.
Would you take, one exam?
Yes.
Take another one and, compare them.
Good.
And then add another one.
Good. Alright, so let's try that with our cards here. Alright, so I take one card. Was this your card? Just say yes, because you said I could take any card. Oh, it's an ace. Ace of hearts. All right, now what do I do next? I reach into the pile, and I get the next card.
And you sort those.
And I'm just going to sort these, which is easy, ace 2. All right, so I run through the list that I have so far, a very small list, and I just add my next card to it. So now I've got a very small sorted list. Right? I go and reach for the next card. A 4. All right, so now I run through my list and figure out where it goes. It goes at the end. So now I've got a sorted list of 3. Next one. 10. They're coming out in order, which is interesting. I go through the list to figure out where it goes. It goes at the end. Okay, so I've done that one. Get the next one. Now I've got another 4. I go through the list and I say, 4 would go in this list between the 4 and the 10, so I insert it. Right? Is this what you're thinking?
Yeah, insertion.
Insertion sort. Right. So this is called insertion sort because it's called insertion sort. And what's the running time of this sort? Well, toward the end, I've got n sorted things in my hand. And I have to go through and make n comparisons to figure out where they go. So it turns out that basically you do one comparison to get the first card in, 2 comparisons to get the second card in, 3 comparisons to get the third card in, plus 4, plus 5, plus 6, all the way up to n. 1 plus 2 plus 3, da-da-da-da, plus up to n is n squared. Right? This comes up a lot. This is that triangle sequence again. So this is another n squared sort. It's sort of the inverse of selection sort, but it's a good sort, and it's easy to think about, easy to implement, and it works well. But if you're talking about sorting 1,000 elements, 1,000 squared is like 1,000,000. It's starting to drag a little bit. So you don't necessarily want a sort that's that slow if you can come up with something faster. All right. Any other ideas? Those are the selection sort and insertion sort are kind of the ones that I think most people think of when they're sorting cards in their hands. But if you've got another one, let me know. Otherwise, I'm going to move on. All right? All right, this is Python code for doing selection sort, but it's just doing what I said. It's finding the smallest, pulling it out of the list, sorting what's left. All right, we talked about how this is actually n squared. There's other sorts like bubble sort, counting sort, insertion sort, shell sort. They all end up being basically n squared. All right. I think we've done examples like this before. I'm going to dive too much into this. But this is this idea of splitting things in half, like binary search. This is a really useful thing to do. Because it gets us down from n to log n, I think we're short. All right. Binary search sort. All right. So what I'd like to do now is tell you about Hillis, in the book, if you read his description, he talks about a sort called merge sort, which actually has a running time of n times the log of n. So this is one of the good sorts, one of the really fast sorts. So you can read in the book, he'll explain merge sort to you. It's It's not deep. No, it is. It's interesting. It's deep, but it's not mind-bending. Like, you can read through and say, oh, I understand how that works. But I'm going to tell you about a different sort, which actually is a bit faster than that, so fast that people call it quicksort. Which is not a very descriptive name, in a sense. It doesn't tell you how to sort fast. It just tells you that it sorts fast. So here's how quicksort works. See if I can do it with a pile of cards again. This is sort of a weird idea, but it is very clever. And you can and things end up sorting really fast. All right, so here's my stack of cards. First thing we're going to do is what we'd like to do, if we could magically separate, like know what the median. Well, is that the right way to explain it? Let me just explain the algorithm as it is, and not how it's written up there, and see if this kind of makes sense to you. So here's what we're going to do. We're just going to pick any card from the deck, okay? Any of the numbers, okay? Two. Turns out to be a sucky choice, but we're going to live with it. All right. So now what we do is we're going to separate all the cards that we've got into the ones that are bigger than the two and the ones that are smaller than the two. We're going to make two piles. So I'm going to do that. Here we go. Is two bigger or smaller than two? I'll make it equal to two. All right. I got a three. That's bigger. Nine, seven, five. Ace, that's smaller. Three is bigger. Ace, that's smaller. Four, two, that's the same. Three is bigger. Jack is bigger. Ten is bigger. Four is bigger. Four is bigger. Two is smaller. No, two is equal. Ace is the same. Ace is smaller. All right. So now, in front of me, you might not be able to see this. You can't see this. But in front of me, I've got a stack of twos. I've got a stack of things smaller than two. And I've got a stack of things bigger than two. What do I know about what the ordering is going to be on these cards once they're sorted? Well, this is kind of obvious because the only things smaller than two are aces. And they're all sorted now. And the twos are smaller than everything else. So we can already start kind of fixing things up. So now the aces are going to be the beginning of our list. The twos are going to be what's next. Those are all sorted. We're done with them. That was easy. But we still have to deal with the rest of this. But we know, because of the way we did that, we know that none of these cards are two or smaller. So they're all going to go on top of that stack when we're done. So we don't ever have to touch those guys again. Let's see if we can get a more interesting pivot this time. All right, choosing a random number. Here we go. Here, help me out here.
Pick a better one than I did.
Thanks. Anyway. All right. Five. All right. So what am I doing now? I'm taking all the cards that I've got and just separating them into piles. Smaller, equal, or bigger than five. 10 is bigger. Jack is bigger. 3 is smaller. 4 is smaller. 3 is smaller. 7 is bigger. 9 is bigger. 3 is sticky. 3 is smaller. 4 is smaller. 4 is smaller. Okay. That was more interesting than mine, so thank you. I appreciate that. So here we go. We've got a bunch of things bigger than 5, but we don't have time to deal with them right now. We're just going to put them aside. Then we've got 5, which we don't have time to deal with right now. I'm just going to put those aside. Now we've got a bunch of numbers that are smaller than 5. They're not sorted, but we can sort them. How? We'll use the same technique that we've been using, recursively. Okay? So we're going to just pick one of these cards at random. 4, and we'll separate things into, well, it turns out smaller than 4 and equal to 4. All right. Now I've got these 3s. Where are they going to go in the sorted list? They're going to go on top of everything we've got so far and under everything else. So we know where these go now. We can just put them in our stack. Same thing with the 4s. We know they're bigger than everything that we've already put down and smaller than everything that we put aside. So we put them aside. We put them into our sorted pile. Now we pull the first thing off our stack, and it was the 5 all by itself. We know that that's next. And here's what we're left with. A couple other cards. So we're going to just repeat the process again. All right. Pick a card. 10, separate into bigger, smaller, or equal to 10. Jack is bigger, 9 is smaller, 7 is smaller. Big pile we're going to set aside for later. The 10 we're going to set aside for later. And now we've got the 9 and the 7. We repeat. 7. 9 is bigger than 7. All right, this 7, where does it go? Onto the stack of sorted cards. It's smaller than everything else. The 9, where does it go? Onto the stack of sorted cards. It's smaller than everything else. Two cards left. Jack and 10. 10, Jack. Done. All right, so we've now sorted this whole stack. And the way that we did it is by splitting it into piles, sorting each one of them, but making sure that the piles aren't going to intersect each other. Separating the big ones from the small ones, sorting the small ones, sorting the big ones, and combining them together, and they'll be sorted because they were separated. That's how quicksort works. It turns out that this is n log n. It's much faster. Why? Because what's basically happening is each time we flip a card into a pile, it's always joining a smaller pile than the one that it was in, And about half the time, it's a pile that's half the size of the one that was in before. And that can only happen log n times. You can only join a pile that's half your size log n times. So each card gets flipped down log n times. There's n cards, n times log n. There's nicer analyses, but I don't think there's any simpler than that. That's actually a very simple way of describing it. All right, so that's the idea of quick sort. I'm not sure I would tell you that this is a good way of sorting cards, but it is a good way of sorting really big lists of numbers or strings. All right, so I've got an example in the notes. We'll kind of step through it and see what you get out of it. The analysis basically says that half the time, the split ends up being kind of in halves, nearly halves, and that's enough to make it so that you end up doing just log n operations per card. So the card that I picked out before is called a pivot. That's just a bit of terminology. And what we do is we partition the cards into the ones smaller than the pivot, equal to the pivot, and bigger to the pivot. And we just keep repeating this operation over and over again. That's quick sort. Okay, all right. So, what's the time? Does anybody know what time it is? 4:30. All right, good. 4:30, perfect. And 4:40, we're done. So I'm going to, I'm going to show you a movie. Yes, and that should end the lecture. All right, so.
In an IT department on a Dell in Texas, I met up with a sorter I didn't think I knew. I said, my name's Selection. He said, you can call me Quicksort. And since we're sharing cycles, won't you tell me what you do? I said, I put my cards in order by running through my data and pulling out the smallest card from the ones here in my fist. Start the process over, and after n times through the pile, I've got a sorted list. So he looked at me with pity and said, son, that ain't too pretty. With n times through a list of n, your time is quadratic. And his voice fell to a whisper, and the dispatch stopped its whining. Said, if you're gonna sort a list, boy, you got to learn to sort it quick. You got to know when to swap it, know when to stop them, know when to terminate, and know when to run.